Welcome back to Customers Who Click, the e-commerce podcast for D2C brands. In each episode, we will look to answer one important question. What is the one thing brands should be doing right now to get customers clicking? Each guest will take us through actionable insights and real-life examples from brands excelling in the art of customer attraction. So whether you're looking to enhance your conversion rates, boost average order values, or extend customer lifetime value, this is the podcast for you. Visit customerswhoclick.com for all our past episodes and to connect with us. Now dive into the world of D2C e-commerce with us and unravel the secrets to keeping those customers clicking. Today's guest is the amazing Stacey Howell, Vice President of e-commerce at Cotopaxi, an incredible outdoor brand moving people to do good and inspiring adventure. Stacey's got a wealth of experience in the e-commerce world with brands such as Timberland, New Balance, Wolverine Worldwide, and of course now Cotopaxi. And I'm confident what she's sharing with us today will be really inspiring for all those brands listening. So Stacey, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Will. I'm really excited to chat with you today and to share some of my experiences at Cotopaxi and some of the other brands that you mentioned.
Yeah, awesome. So firstly, just tell us, like, why e-commerce?
I love this space. You know, I have been a tinkerer my entire career. And by that, I mean, I love the idea of making things better, leaving things better than you found them. And technology and e-commerce are so well suited for that because of the data we have available to us. So my team and my career has really been rooted around how do we find those opportunities to partner and create something really great with our customer and make them better over time.
Yeah, amazing. And use a lot of data to do that. A lot of data, a lot of feedback.
A ton of data to do that. That is the central theme, absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. I remember one of my first roles, which is probably what got me into CRO really, was it was a digital product. It was like Spotify for magazines. And so we could see really detailed user data on what they would do, what everyone was doing within the app itself. Yeah. And that's where I started to pick up on this kind of, what are those good signals, bad signals? What indicates someone's going to stay with us and keep subscribing? What indicates they're going to churn? And that led me down that route of customer feedback and, yeah, all the way to now.
Yeah, and that is so relevant today. I agree with you in that we had early signals early on. But the fascinating thing for those of us that are able to build brands and build products and services is to remember that we don't own our brands, and brands are not static things, right? Brands are constantly evolving and changing and growing. And as we grow, it's important to grow and build and co-build the brand with your consumers. And the way that you do that is through data, right? It's about ensuring that customer has a seat at the table and that they can directly inform and co-create with you the very experience they ultimately will consume from you. And really the only way that you can do that is by listening, as you're saying, and watching and teasing out, hey, what's working? What's really good, and how do we do more of that? And then on the other side, where are the points of confusion? Where are the points of friction? Where are they not having success? And how can we start to tease that out and figure out how we can iteratively and progressively over time enable them to be even more successful with our product or brand?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, getting into that then, so what do you think is the one thing that brands should be focused on right now?
Yeah, to me, it's two things. One, it's about being more than the product and service you sell. Have a purpose. Consumers nowadays are looking for brands, product services that are much more than the brand, product, or service they offer. They are playing a larger role in the community that they operate. And so it's really important to have that larger purpose. Consumers will gravitate towards that. And then the second part of that is, as we were just talking about, it's about ensuring that consumers are aware of that and can participate in the growing and scaling of your brand and of your mission, of your purpose. So if I use Cotopaxi as an example, you noted, you know, we're an outdoor and an adventure brand. And we are very much committed to improving the experience, the quality of life of those in our community and those around the world. And our invitation to the consumers is see the world and make it better. And what we believe that by going into the outdoors and exploring the outdoors and spending time in nature and going out and traveling and exploring the world or even exploring parts of your own country or area, that you're exposed to more things and you become more well-rounded. You become maybe more empathetic. You broaden your knowledge of how things are done. And that creates, I think, the desire to have a bigger impact yourself. And so for a brand that has this invitation about going out and making it better, you know, we take that very seriously from an e-commerce and from a digital standpoint. We recognize that we need to, on a daily basis, continue to make it better and to work with our customers on how we do that.
Yeah. And is this something that has that been there from the start? Or is this something that has kind of been introduced and maybe made more intense?
From the very beginning, it is truly part of our origin story. So our founder, Davis Smith, grew up in South America, and he witnessed extreme poverty on a day-to-day basis. And he felt like there's an opportunity as a business leader to do more, to help those around us have the same opportunities and to get out of those sort of extreme poverty situations. And so Cotopaxi from the very beginning was about encouraging people to go out and explore the world as he did as a child growing up in South America. But in doing so, to work hard to ensure that we're lifting those up around us and giving everybody the same sort of chance to benefit and grow.
Yeah. And so is this something that you feel, has it been, you know, evident in all the marketing and everything like ongoing? Because I think what we see a lot is, you know, the founder of the brand has those good intentions. Mm-hmm. They have this mission, but it kind of gets a bit lost just in the, you know, in the, you know, when you're so busy building a business and there's so much to do, sometimes some of those bits get lost when you may be rushing, you know, to try and grow. But is this something that's been evident throughout, or is it something that's had to be kind of renewed or revisited at all?
You know, it is a purposeful effort by every member of our leadership team to ensure that it stays integral to everything we do. So from creating and designing and manufacturing product, this mission is woven through. It goes right to the suppliers that we choose to work with, the materials we choose to use, and every asset of the business is thinking about how can we do this? What is the impact? How do we have a lower environmental impact? How can we provide better jobs, better security, better quality of life wherever we choose to operate? So it is a very deliberate and intentional inclusion in all of our strategic discussions, all of our product reviews. But your point is really valid because as we grow, you're adding more and more people from very different perspectives. You know, we are a remote first company. So we have people all over the United States that may never have been to Salt Lake City, may never have actually seen the place of origin, so to speak. So there is a very deliberate and focused effort to ensure that when you're onboarded to the company, that you understand how we operate and why we operate. It's regularly communicated in our leadership meetings. And as we talk about our financial success, we are also at the same time talking about the impact that we're having and ensuring that those stay in alignment. So you're exactly right. It would be very easy for us in the spirit of growing and moving fast and bringing new people on with great new perspectives and ideas to inadvertently maybe leave that behind. But we have made a very intentional decision to ensure that stays with us. You know, and our company, our customers keep us honest to that degree too. We regularly chat with our customers and we'll ask them, well, how did you learn about Cotopaxi? Why did you choose Cotopaxi? And that our purpose, our mission is the number one reason people discovered us and chose to learn about us and maybe purchase products from us. So they also let us know how important it is to them and are sure that we remain true to that.
Yeah. And I suppose if that's all kind of going on in the background, it makes the marketing side a bit easier.
That's
because
true.
It genuinely is there. It's everything the marketing team is being told about new products and everything comes with that cause and that why as well.
So that's right.
They're having to do, I guess, less work thinking like, what is special about this? What do we have to say? Because they're just given that information.
Well, that's right.
That's cool.
And if you think about the way that information is shared today, the proliferation of places that consumers learn and talk and engage around products and brands has just increased dramatically. So it's very hard to try to, I guess, control that message as you go out. But if it's truly endemic to how you behave on a day in and day out basis, that sort of goes out organically and naturally. And I don't want to suggest that our marketing team doesn't work really hard to ensure that stays, those messages yeah. stay together. They do. But you're right in that because it's such an authentic part of how we behave every day, however consumers sort of get introduced to the brand, they do experience it. And that gets reinforced throughout. We hope anyway, that is certainly our intent.
Yeah. And so for brands who are listening who maybe haven't quite got that nailed quite as well, maybe they had that initial mission and either it's got a bit lost, as I mentioned, when they're growing the company, or it's just not quite, it's not really shining through. Where would you recommend starting? Like, how can brands kind of try to ensure that is that mission, that why? So that, like you said at the start, they are more than just a product and selling a service. They are the brand to go to.
It's so important that this be authentic. It can't be manufactured. So if you're new to your company or if you have new leadership team, as much as you can, go back to the artifacts. Go back to the original story. And most brands will do a good job of preserving those early photos, you know, product markups, whatever they are. And so those, we continue to look at those today. In fact, you know, one of our original founding members of Code Epoxy happened to be one of our creative directors. And he will on occasion share, hey, this was what the early logo looked like. And here's why we designed it the way that we did. And so these artifacts, these totems that were the initial illustrations or attempts to communicate who we were still inspire us today. So I would say go there as much as you can, go back to the origin, those artifacts and totems of why you came to be and what you were trying to solve initially and reground yourself in those things. And I think the more that you can really focus in on what is our purpose, what is that internal rallying cry? So how do you motivate all of you? And then what is the external invitation, right? Like, how do you want to translate that into something that means something to your customers? And then as we talked about earlier in this session, ensuring that your customers are part of that feedback loop so they can help in that invitation and make that a truly authentic experience that they'll ultimately consume with you and build with you.
Yeah. And I'd like to touch on that in a second, actually, but just come back to the authenticity piece. Mm-hmm. I suppose, again, like when you hire new people and they experience that story, mm-hmm. they're not just being told, oh, we're a sustainable brand, we're trying to do good. They can actually see the evidence that's been the mission throughout. And so they get that feeling of authenticity as well. And that probably impacts on them quite a lot so that they then feel really part of that mission as well to then do the job rather than just being told we are a sustainable brand.
That's right.
That's right.
And in some ways, it's harder to get that across when you're fully remote because there's so much. If you think about being in a physical space together, you know, the office space, the way that you decorated, all of those sort of visual inspirations that are in our home office, you know, how do you share that? And how do you get that across virtually? And so we do a lot of things that are really rooted in how do you sort of translate maybe a look and a feel into a feel? And so the way we start our meetings, the way that we engage each other is very intentional because it is about trying to convey the way the brand feels in a remote place so that you feel very connected to it, even if you don't get to sit in the office and experience it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that. That's great. Coming back to the customer piece, getting feedback from customers, right? You said they hold you accountable. Is that through customer service and reviews and the feedback that you receive, or do you have like groups, you know, do you have like a VIP group or a community that you actually engage with regularly to ask for feedback on things and get their, you know, how they felt about a marketing campaign or how they felt about new products and things like that?
So the answer is yes and yes. So we are using every resource that we have to listen to our customers. So sometimes it's done sort of organically. So through social channels, for example, we're very fortunate to have a very active community on the major social platforms. And so they readily tell us and share with us, love this, you know, or challenge us. This didn't quite work. This wasn't what I expected. So we have a team that are constantly listening, actively engaging and responding in social media. Our customer service team does the same. They are always chatting with our customers and really sort of teasing out if a customer comes in and vocalizes a frustration or a disappointment, trying to really tease out what happened, why it happened, what their expectation was, and how we can best remedy that going forward. And we have mechanisms where one of them is a monthly touch base where our customer service team updates the entire company on what we're seeing and hearing from sort of the front lines so that we're all held accountable to what our customers are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. Now, we also have a group of customers that will regularly reach out to. So we're fortunate to have a very active e-commerce customer base. And so we can reach out to them and we'll ask consumers that may have purchased from us recently, what their experience was, what was good, what was not good. Was there something they were looking for that they couldn't find? Do they have a need that we're sort of not meeting? We'll also talk to people who haven't shopped us in a long time and said, hey, what's going on? What can we do better? You know, is there something there that you experienced that we should be aware of so that we can refine and make better for the next customer? So it's that scheduled regular interval of communication, as well as a lot of the organic opportunities that consumers will provide to us.
I like that idea of having customer service present to the company. I think that's so important because, well, like you said, they're speaking to your customers every single day.
That's right.
It's literally their job to take in the feedback, the complaint or the question, and help that person solve their problem. But then they're sat on that goldmine of, well, you know, this week we had 30 people say they had this problem. How do we resolve it? Or, you know, we launched this new product and now we're getting loads of people contacting us asking what the size is or how does it work or, you know, little details about the product. If that just sits in customer service, you might have 30 people who are now happy and they've got the answer. 10, 15 of them might buy because that's what they needed to know. But you've got potentially hundreds of people who didn't get that information now lost, right? So if that feedback is then pushed into the rest of the company, you get the website team can go update the page to say, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's got a zip, you know, it's a jacket with a zip and not buttons, whatever.
That's right.
And that, you know, that content can go out in emails, ads, you know, wherever else is necessary and relevant for that information to be, and the whole business benefits. The other piece of feedback might be that everyone hates having a zipper on a jacket and they all want buttons. And so
That's exactly right, Will. And our customer service team also participates in our product development meetings. So they're providing that active feedback as we're starting to concept new ideas. And just like you said, I'm sort of laughing because we did have a conversation where we had a very like, should it be button? Should it be zip? Should it be this? Should it be that? And so they really do provide a very important perspective and are able to influence a tremendous amount of the business. They, for everything from product development to our technical roadmap, for example. So as we're thinking about enhancements we want to make to the site, we want to improve the site experience involving our customer service team in that process so that they can also test along with us and provide that active feedback is hugely helpful. And so we love their participation throughout and yeah, they're really invaluable to us. And we all wear that. We all sort of say that we should be an advocate for the customer, you know, whichever role that we have.
And that team, obviously they're going to have opinions, but their opinions are probably also going to be swayed by the feedback that they've been getting, right?
That's right.
The first thing they're going to be thinking is, oh, now that you mentioned that, I've had a few conversations this week with customers who said the opposite or gave this feedback or something. And the best thing there is then just sat in a meeting saying, this product should be designed like this because that's what our customers are telling us. And importantly, not specifically about that product that we're trying to launch or something, right? They're all telling us they prefer zips, not buttons.
That's right.
Right? So don't design a product that has buttons on it. Because otherwise, you know, if you don't have that feedback, you don't have that data like you were talking about at the start, it just comes down to opinions. and
that's right.
Who wants to do what? And I remember, I think it was episode 2 of the podcast. So quite a while ago now. Parry Mum from Frazee, AI copywriting tool. And we talked about how the AI is really good at removing bias from decisions because the tool will spit out, you know, 20, it probably does a lot more now, to be fair. This was 5-6 years ago when I used it. It will spit out 20 subject lines for you, right? And the idea is you test, right? If you've got the data, you test 5 of them, whatever. You pick a little mix or you just ask it to write 5. Anyway, the idea is if there's 2 of us or 3 of us in that email team and we're not using AI to produce the subject lines, it's most likely going to come down to whichever one of us has the strongest will in the room and is the loudest person and is going to push for their choice to be the right one. Mm-hmm. And I see that happening a lot in various other situations where data isn't used. It's generally either the loudest person in the room or the most senior person in the room who then makes that decision.
That's very true. And as you're chatting, I am reflecting on a big part of that our customer service team is also data. So we try to capture and digitize, if you will, or sort of datatize that customer feedback as much as we can. So just to your point, we're human beings at our heart. And so we have our own perceptions. We hear things. We have our biases that are good, bad. We don't intend to. That's just being a human being. And so by trying to normalize some of this feedback and getting it into data so that we can step back and look at it objectively, that's a huge help. So you sort of have the customer service rep's perception. They're going to tell us what's happening. That's really interesting and dive in. Sometimes that's validated. Sometimes if you dive into the data, it might not be. Doesn't mean we're not going to listen to it because they're hearing it enough that's informing their perception. But it's really good to start to have that larger data set that we can all regroup around and say, okay, you know, and sometimes it asks more questions. Actually, often data leads to more questions. And so that gives us an opportunity to say, okay, well, let's add these follow-up questions. So if someone's contacting us about this, that, or the other thing, let's try to go a level deeper and really try to calibrate in on what's happening here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love qualitative data, right? I think it's, quant has its place, of course, but the qualitative data is really what tells you what's going on, what the problem is, what people's questions are. But like you said, it is worth, especially if you've got a lot of the data, it's worth quantifying the qualitative data so you can get a feel for how big an issue this actually is. You know,
that's right.
As you were talking about that, I was reminded of doing some customer research for a client a couple of years ago. It was a pillow for neck pain. And we were asking people what their biggest problems, why, you know, what they're trying to solve with the neck pain or with the pillow, what issues does the neck pain cause them, or actually just what is their issue generally, which is why they're looking for one of these products. And obviously, like, neck pain was one that we kind of knew about, shoulder pain the same, headaches, these were the big ones that always popped up. Mm-hmm. So I remember seeing, I think it was stiffness. The word stiffness popped up in the feedback. And I caught on to this when I was reading through it and analyzing it. And I thought, oh, stiffness, we hadn't thought about that. That's a really good angle. And then when I quantified it, out of about 400 responses, 2 had mentioned stiffness. So it's not something to rule out, but it's not exactly the big problem. But because I just kind of biased it, you know, by accident, because it was new information. And I thought, oh, hang on, this is something we haven't considered yet. And then obviously the reason we hadn't considered it is because it's not actually that big an issue for people.
Right. That's valuable too, though. That's valuable too.
Yeah. It's just important to like quantify the qualitative data so you can understand, is this a problem that multiple people are having, or is it just something that, because it's new, it's kind of stood out and we've picked up on it, and let's make sure it's actually something before, you know, going and developing a new product.
That's
different because we've got this one piece of feedback. Mm-hmm. Have you got, I guess, outside the sustainable and kind of environmental sort of businesses, have you got any other examples of brands that are really mission focused?
You know, there are so many when you think about how that gets articulated and experienced. And certainly within my category, one cannot go on without mentioning Patagonia. Patagonia gives us a tremendous amount of inspiration when we think about how they, their entire governance, how they set up their organization is very much rooted in realizing their mission. So that's within category. You know, what I think is really interesting is we talked a lot about data. So we'll give an example that is from a company that has a tremendous amount of data, but also has a very clear purpose and role. And that's Google, right? We all use Google so much that it has become a verb. We Google this, we Google that. What is fascinating to me about the way that Google has taken advantage of the volume of data that is at its disposal, and its fundamental value to all of us, is we want to help you answer questions. We want to help you find answers, move as quickly as you can and as accurately as you can. And we've been talking about data, but you also mentioned artificial intelligence, right? So that's really changing a lot of how we all will work. And we're all trying to get our heads around how to best utilize that. And one of the interesting things that Google is doing right now with its primary product, its search product, is in the past, you would ask Google a question and it would work so hard to find the websites or content that was most relevant to you, right? And it would prioritize those for you, and it might highlight words in the search results, the preview, to give you a sense of how they're going to answer that question. Well, with generative AI, their Gemini product, they've been able to consume all of that content and then summarize without you having to leave Google at all, answers to your question. And these answers can be extremely detailed. So no longer are you needing to click through to all of these different websites and try to get a sense of the best answer for the question that you're asking. Google has done a tremendous amount of time savings for you by saying, hey, we've done all the work, we've summarized it all, and here is a summary of the best answers we believe for that question. And as you interact with it, it's going to continue to refine learning how you like to learn. So maybe you really like video. Well, you're going to find that video is surfaced more. And so there's a real interesting value that they're delivering to those that are trying to answer a question that I think is really fun and exciting and does create opportunities for those of us that are trying to help consumers solve problems too, right? It's a real fun way of thinking. Gosh, they have really sort of changed the entire consumer experience, but they're doing it because they're trying to show that we're the best solution for you for solving that problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons, and you could have an entire episode about this. I like, you know, obviously, who doesn't like getting the result they need as quickly as possible, and just the quick search, cool, it's there. Got the information, I can go. But I feel like there's a bit of an issue with, you know, it consuming all that content and then presenting an answer to you, because essentially what it's doing is taking other people's content and then answering, you know, providing you that information without really crediting that person or that company back.
That's true.
So I think there's pros and cons. You know, I know a lot of the time it's still a snippet. Yeah. So you kind of, you get a feel and you go, this is probably the information I need. And then you can click in and get the full thing. But yeah, I know there've been a few concerns about the way Google's been going with a couple of things like that.
And it's good that we have those conversations, right? I think we're all learning and this is moving so quickly. So it's really good that we at the same time build, but make sure that there's the appropriate checks and balances and credits and that need to be there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Just before we finish up, what would you say is the biggest mistake from your career?
You know, that word mistake is so important, because I would say, as I reflect on my career, particularly early in my career, I didn't make enough mistakes. And what I mean by that is, it's so easy to have a fear of failure, right? And this is even someone who loved tinkering, like I said, and loved testing and building and trying things new. I still always had a bit of fear of taking that big risk or taking that leap because of a fear of failure. And yet failure is critical to our growth as individuals, as brands. It's really how we learn, right? And so I think the key in this process is, how can we identify failure as quickly as possible? And more importantly, How do we develop the skills to adapt, to pivot, to course correct quickly? Because those are critical skills in today's environment. So, you know, I take it, if I could go back in time, I would tell myself, embrace failure, you know, give it a seat at the table, expect it, plan for it. And one of the ways that we do that now with my teams is I like to do what I call pre-mortem. So rather than a post-mortem, a pre-mortem, where if you're going into a major launch, a product launch or what have you, gathering a cross-functional team together and say, hey, if it's going to break, if it's going to fail, where are we vulnerable? Where might this just not go the way that we thought? And get all these different perspectives on where might we fall down? And through that process, start to begin mitigation plans where you can. You're already starting to put into place some of the pivots that you may need to make before you've even launched this thing. And what's so important is that there's two outputs that come out of this process I generally find. One, you get really good at identifying signals. What are those leading indicators, the very early signs that maybe we were wrong or maybe we're not on track? And how can we read those quickly across the different parts of the customer journey to begin to identify if failure is happening or about to happen? And then two, this process also creates a culture of adaptivity, of agility, of problem solving. You basically create a team that isn't afraid of failing. In fact, they're sort of expecting it. And what they focus on instead is how can I adjust and pivot and solve the problem? It gives a confidence in what they're doing. And it makes it a lot more fun because now as a group, you're sort of expecting it or expecting that things will happen, but you're ready to adjust and pivot as you go.
Yeah, you've got an idea of, obviously, you don't know what's going to go wrong, but you're prepared for the fact that something might go wrong. And if you've done that pre-mortem, you know where it's likely to go wrong. If something's going to go wrong, you just don't know what exactly that's going to be. It's funny you mentioned this, though. I was thinking about this exact same thing this morning around kind of, you know, making mistakes early on, like testing things, learning. Just as long as you're learning from it, that's what counts, really. If you just keep making mistakes, then you're not getting anywhere. But if you test things, and you know, a lot of what I did in the early days of my career was just give things a go, test it, see what happens, and then learn and iterate from there. And it wasn't proper testing that we do now. It wasn't A/B testing. It was just launching an email and seeing what happens. And if it didn't land as well as we'd hoped, we just try something else next time.
Right.
And just making sure they're learning from these things and then saying, well, you know, we noticed that this particular thing worked back then. Why don't we try that again? And just developing from there. So, yeah, I think that's a really great answer. Thank you.
Yeah, well, in the process too, right, you were learning that it's okay and we can adjust and we'll be even better next time. And that's so critical. If there's one skill I would really encourage those that are in school and college to learn is it is really being comfortable with data, reading data, but more importantly, have the flexibility to make a change because you're just going to do the need to.
And I think, I guess the key thing here really, well, for me is it's not, obviously, you should be set up so that an actual mistake isn't made.
Right.
But things might not go how you want them to go, how you expect them to go. So it's not, oh no, like who made this mistake? Why did that happen? It should be, why didn't this go as well as we'd hoped? What do we learn from this? What do we do next time?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yes. Could not agree more. Well said. Thanks, Will.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Stacey. If anyone wants to reach out and find out more from you, what's the best way of doing that?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, so they can ping me there. I check that regularly and happy to connect and have more conversation. So looking forward to it.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. That's all we have time for today. If you have any questions or would like to add to today's conversation, join me here on the podcast, sponsor the show, or work with me. Simply email will@customerswhoclick.com, visit our website, customerswhoclick.com, or connect with me, Will Lawrenson, on LinkedIn. But until next time, keep those customers clicking.